Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Peter Herzog. Now, Peter is one of those guys who just gets it. Like, he is sold out when it comes to his passions and how he's going to pursue them. In fact, he's built his life around pursuing his passions. Between faith, family, and outdoor adventures, this guy has started businesses. He's gone out solo at 17 on his very first Western hunt, and he's going to tell you more about that in this episode. But it is really, really a good episode. I hope you're excited about it. Before we jump into the show, though, I've got to remind you about Bowfest, because we are like 1 week away. It is up at Mont Dulac Resort in Superior, Wisconsin, July 25th through 28th. And remember, this is like the world's largest archery and music festival. They've got like six different courses, over 100 targets, live music every night. You've got the opportunity to go to the vendor village and meet some hunting celebrities, people that you've probably watched growing up and on TV, on their videos, now probably on YouTube. And it's just a really, really good time. I thoroughly enjoyed my experience last year. And if you want to go and sign up, register at bowfest.com. And when you register, use code NOMADIC for a special discount. Now, let's hop into the show with Peter.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show, and I'm already excited about this one. Peter Herzog is on with me, and we're just going to be talking all about hunting, business. I've been creeping on your Instagram page and seeing all of the different adventures, and after seeing all of these like back-to-back hunts or like success stories, I'm like, I might have to change my name. Like, you kind of might have the Nomadic Outdoorsman title now.
I like to bounce around a little bit.
Yeah. Dude, tell me about yourself. Tell the listeners about yourself and maybe a little history on how you got into hunting.
You bet. So I grew up in Minnesota and absolutely love the outdoors. Spent a lot of time outside, the bow fishing, the waterfall, deer hunting in Minnesota for what it's worth. Shot my first deer with a bow when I was 12. And just kind of been in love with it ever since. So grew up shooting kind of traditional, then got a compound when I was 11 and just shot rabbits, squirrels, chipmunks, you name it. If it was alive, it was in trouble on our family farm. We had a strawberry and raspberry farm growing up. And then I started a business when I was 17 and grew up with a large family. I got six siblings. My dad was a pastor, still is a pastor. And so just kind of kept priorities right, but got married young at 20. And that year we got married, I think we traveled to three or four states hunting. So I was buying tags and whatnot, but I really got a start. I packed up a van when I was 17 and went out to Wyoming for 12 days, all by myself. Never been west of the Missouri River. I guess I've been to the Black Hills once when I was younger, but yeah. And just started from there, got in my blood, the sage got in it, and I haven't looked back since.
Dang. So what was that like? I mean, what was the thought process going into that? I want a big adventure, but I need a vehicle. I'm going to just go figure it out on my own.
So there is an old mouse infested van that the church is getting rid of. And so we had bought it for strawberries and raspberries, but then, I threw a twin mattress in it. And I had no idea how to apply for tags. I had no GPSs. I had nothing. I had one of the travel maps you buy that show national forest. And that was the extent of my mapping. and I'd bought leftover tags. So after the second draw in Wyoming, there were still a few back then that you could buy. Bought some pretty crappy ones, but that's what I ended up with. And I was like, I have a very tight window before my fall basically start school-wise. So I have 1 week to get it done, or 12 days or whatever I ended up with. So I would go out antelope opener, and then there's a couple cow elk hunts that were early. And so I did that for a couple years. And it was great. I mean, that time coming from Minnesota, if you've ever done a Western hunt, it's a very scary thing. And so at 17, I really didn't know any better. And so I remember walking around, I think it was my second year out there in Colorado, and I was 18, and I hopped out of the van one morning and 3 miles to go to get up to where I wanted to hunt elk. And I'd met this guy at a gas station, right? And he wrote me a map on the back of a napkin. So it was north of Glenwood Springs in Colorado. You can go there. There's not a lot of elk there anymore, but at the point in time, he's an old outfitter. He wrote me this map. And so I remember bouncing around in this road. I was driving through creeks with a 15-passenger van. We're talking like 40-some miles off the nearest decent road. At 11,000 feet, being a flatlander at best, I had no idea what I was doing. But I saw a herd of probably 180 elk, and they were screaming their heads off. I think the August season or archery season opened the end of August, like October 28th or something that year. And so it just got in my blood. I still have a tree stand in there. If anyone wants the coordinates, they can reach out to me. but yeah, that's that was kind of the start. And you just kind of get better. I never really had a teacher or mentor. I had some people kind of come along the way, but been really solo, just kind of figuring it out. Yeah. And so I've met great people now, and I have a lot of hunting buddies that I'll go hunt with. But at the beginning, it was me, myself, and I.
Dude, that's just jumping in head first. I get a lot of people that reach out and they're like, hey man, I want to know about elk hunting. I want to learn about it. And it is amazing having somebody kind of walk you through certain things that like you don't necessarily have to figure out on your own, but like just little pointers here and there. This is what we're looking for this time of year. But when you go and do it on your own, like there's no substitute for those lessons. You're not going to forget those lessons that you're learning out there.
Not at all. And it, I mean, it stuck with me well. And so I would say I have a very good skill at planning those hunts ahead of time and just having a good expectation of what I'm walking into. And so even when I've hunted New Mexico a bunch of times, like you're just picking apart a unit and you're talking to some people and you're getting some info from them, but you're just really figuring out from a 30,000 foot perspective to 20,000 feet to 10,000 feet to where we're going to camp. And then knowing when to pull the plug and we're moving somewhere else versus just adapting versus sticking it out. And so you develop a really good gut for figuring out how to make that happen. And so I'm nowhere near some of the guys I know. And I mean, honestly, I tell my wife a lot of times, like if I had grown up out west, I wish I could see what I, you know, don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm very thankful with where I've gotten. I mean, it's much harder today to get the tags and the availability in the hunts. And so I mean, I'm thankful for when I got into it, but also like, man, I wish I could have seen what it would be like to grow up here 20 years ago.
Oh yeah. I hear stories about that and just how different it was, you know, like now with social media, with podcasts, with all of this information access, people can like pick out their spot without really having any idea and go in there and have success sometimes. And the opportunities and the availability of hunts like that to the everyday guy, even, you know, the Minnesota, Wisconsin, everybody east of the Mississippi, they're realizing, dang, I can go out there and do this. Like me and my buddies were planning an Alaska hunt, and everyone that I talked to, they're like, dude, you're talking $5,000-$7,000. And I'm like, no, we're going to, you know, we don't have that kind of money to spend on this hunt. So we're going to do it on a budget and we're going to figure it out. And we might walk away with a bunch of tag soup, or like, we're very optimistic that we're going to make something happen. And so we're going to get up there and figure it out.
Like, I listen to your podcast. You guys are definitely optimistic.
Yeah, we are. But, dude, I mean,
it's
so
possible.
Excited. Oh,
we killed three moose in 4 days and a blackberry.
Dang. Yeah. See, so, I like that. So do you have coordinates for that tree stand also?
I don't. That one I can't share. That one I'm under an oath of secrecy. But we killed three moose in 4 days and then killed a black bear, I think, day three. So that was 2 years ago, but that was an adventure.
Dang. Yeah. I've been to Alaska a couple times and I fell in love with it. I mean, right away, my wife and I looked at each other like, are we moving here? What are we doing? Because this might be a spot. She loves Florida. We both love Alaska. We do love our home base here in Missouri. But I'm like, what if we just spent like 4 months in each state? We could just bounce. We could be 30-year-old snowbirds. Yeah.
I was up in Alaska last week, so I just got back on Friday. So I definitely,
What'd you have going on up there this time?
So my sister lives up there, which is huge for home court advantage. And so I was able to do the goat hunt for dirt cheap, because my brother-in-law was gracious enough to go with me. So I can hunt as a resident with next of kin.
Dang.
So we were up there visiting her. We went offshore out of Whittier fishing, caught a bunch of lane cod, couple halibut, that sort of thing. And then we hit a bunch of salmon. Then we went down in the Kenai and caught a bunch of salmon too. And then just kind of hung out. So it was a very action packed 4 days, but I think we ended up with about 170 pounds of fish we brought back. So,
dude, isn't that the best? Like, you
know, hunting's the best, but fishing's okay.
No, hunting is the best, but going up there and just seeing like the lifestyle of people there. I mean, I've been to Kodiak twice and that's it. I haven't really done interior Alaska. And I'm excited to see what that has to offer, but just going up there and you just see how active people are. I mean, everybody is out doing stuff and they're gathering blueberries and salmon berries, or they're out fishing, or they're out hunting. Yep. And there's access to, I mean, on a quick trip like that, you don't have time to fully process a moose or process, you know, 170 pounds of fish. You take them to the cannery and they do it and they ship it back with you, or you check an extra bag. And now you've got, I mean, fresh caught fish for a long time.
And we do. Thankfully, my sister has all the setup, so we did it in their kitchen. I definitely have some home court advantage to Alaska, but I would say Montana's a little more similar to that than like the Midwest where I grew up. there's definitely a level of activity that most people have that isn't normal back where I grew up.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What do you think it is about like Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, like the Great Lakes states, that there's a lot of weekend warriors or a lot of Orange Army guys? Because I mean, I'm right there with you. I grew up in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and it was just, there was so much opportunity and we just didn't take advantage of it for whatever reason.
And I'm not sure. Now, I miss it a little bit. I would say like the B and C roll type fun is harder to have in like Montana or even Alaska, where you can run out for 3 hours and do something. Like, I miss that. Like, in Minnesota, we could go grab a fishing pole or you go hunt ducks till late in the morning. I mean, the amount of times I duck hunted before church was unbelievable, right? So that sort of stuff, like, that was what I did growing up. And so I definitely miss that a little bit here. Like, it's much harder to get permission to land to do that. You're not walking public for pheasants. There's not all of that sort of stuff. So I mean, I definitely maximized that when I was in Minnesota, I will say. I spent a lot of days out there, a lot of half days doing random stuff or just hopping in a tree stand for 3 hours, that type of hunting that isn't quite as accessible out here.
Yeah. You got to love the amount of big game tags, though, in Montana. That's the one thing that I'm like.
I do.
The Western states are, I mean, it's just a hot zone for, you know, you can get antelope, mule deer, elk, bear. Yep. Some states wolves still, which we'll see how long most of that lasts, but
hopefully it lasts for a while. We can deal with a few less out here.
Oh my gosh. I hope. I just keep seeing all of these attacks on hunting and traditional outdoor recreation that it makes me nervous. And then hearing that Colorado is doing away with over the counter rifle tags for non-residents and
And I'm all for some of that. And I know not the lion hunting ban or any of that. I'm all for predator management. But Colorado, I mean, I've seen the resources in the time I've hunt diminish rapidly.
Yeah.
And then obviously introducing wolves, which is a whole nother topic, which I am not as informative about to have a long discussion about, especially on a podcast that's going to air publicly. but I've seen the quality diminish in a lot of those areas and a lot of the public land in the West that I've been fortunate enough to hunt. So in the 12 or 13 years, I've really been kind of going hard. The quality of game animals, even the last 4 years, has really diminished, even on public land in Montana. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm not saying there's still not guys out doing it, but it is much harder than it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. And so not only to get the tag, but then for the opportunity. So I have, at least I'm at a place in my hunting career, I'd rather hunt Colorado every 4 years and have a much better hunt than have that opportunity every year with everybody else. Yeah. And so that's coming from someone, I think I've shot 17, 18 bulls now. Like, I've killed enough that it's not like, oh man, I need to go shoot the first 4-point I find. And so I would rather kind of things be overmanaged and that opportunity be not limited. I mean, obviously we want that opportunity for everybody. But I'd rather go on one hunt every year rather than three hunts every year, as I've done in the past. That's a little more quality versus just a quantity deal. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great for seasoned hunters. And I mean, even guys first getting into it, obviously, if they have a better experience their first hunt, but it limits that entry into it, if that makes sense. Like, you know, guys that have been asking me for years, like, dude, can I come out and elk hunt with you? Can I come out and elk hunt with you? I'm like, dude, down the road, like, once I kind of branch off and find my own spot, and we can go together. And my buddy Austin, like, he just went last year and shot a bull on opening day with his bow. First time ever hunting Colorado.
Good for him.
Like, totally fluke deal, but it worked out in his favor. And now to hear that, I'm like, man, it's difficult. It's a difficult pill to swallow when it's something that's been available and then is taken away. Whereas if I just knew, hey, it's going to be every 3 or 4 years that I get a tag out there, like, that's just what it is. But now to have been going out every single year and then it's being pulled back, that's a tough one. But I totally understand the management side. I'm curious to see how that's going to affect the revenue for CPW, because that's
a
lot of money.
I mean, I'm well aware. I've run all the numbers. I mean, even Wyoming with the preference point systems and then going to the 90-10 on the big three, like, I dig into a lot of that and I'm pretty up to date on it. And I will be really curious just to see what happens the next few years.
Yeah.
With all of that. What, and whether, go ahead.
What's your estimate on how much money they're going to lose? I mean, have you
gone through that? I haven't looked at this. So I have not hunted over the counter Colorado now for 3 or 4 years, just because it's gotten worse and worse.
Yeah.
So I haven't looked exactly at what it is, but I just think the tags are going to go up to like Wyoming did. I mean, at some point those tags are just going to jump up to $1,100 to replace that revenue. Yeah. Nothing in life's getting cheaper. And I don't think elk tags are going to be one of those things.
No. I mean, I've seen a spike just since I lived out there, and that was another tough one, buying $49 tags over to $700 tags. And then, you know, preference points for the big three is $100 every time. And I'm like, my wife looked at me one day and we were like dead broke and like starting a business and trying to figure this stuff out.
Yep.
And she looked at me and she goes, "You just spent $300 on tags." And I'm like,
"No, we're out the tag."
That, unfortunately, not. Those would be cheap tags. I'm like, "Those are just points." And she's like, "What do you mean?" And I broke the whole thing down. She's like, "How long is it going to be before you draw?" And I'm like, I might never draw, you know? And when she heard that, I was like, "Oh, I'm in it now." I messed up. I should have had a separate bank account for all this stuff.
Well, and it is. I mean, by the time I get done applying for all the tags in Wyoming and then New Mexico and everywhere else, I mean, between my wife and I would guess we have somewhere between 40 and 50 grand wrapped up easily.
Dang.
I mean, New Mexico alone is 14,000-15,000 and Wyoming's close to 20, I believe. I'd have to look back at it.
So are they still doing, like, you have to pay for your tag and then you get the money refunded if you don't draw?
Yep.
Dude. Talk about a scheme right there. I mean, they're making interest on that money the whole time. That's a brilliant business plan.
Well, I mean, Colorado was that way up until 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But I'll be curious to see where it all goes. I mean, that's where I come back to the business side of things, to start a side gig or do something to make that extra 8 to 10 grand to afford yourself a little better opportunity. And I know that's not for everybody, but there's still a lot of opportunity out there.
Yeah. And I mean, you've done well for yourself. You've started businesses, you've sold businesses.
Yeah.
Talk about that and like kind of building your financial success around the passions, you know, like funding your passions and doing side hustles, you know, working those blue collar jobs or building something that would afford you the time and the finances to get out.
So I've never actually had a W-2 really. So everything I've done has been kind of working a business and whatnot for myself. And I've gotten way better at it since I was 17 and started. My wife is also an absolute BA and has helped me along the process. We've done it all together, which is a super cool story. But it's really realizing, I mean, for us and our family, realizing that everything belongs to God, right? And then you hold it with an open hand. And then outside of that, he gives us skills and passions and talents. And so how are we going to use those for his kingdom? And how does that fit in? So it's using those talents effectively, and it's building wealth and giving and being incredibly generous in the process and hopefully treating people right. And you learn as you go, right? And I definitely haven't done things perfectly, but that's the end goal. And so then in that process, we have been blessed way above anything I would have expected. And so then the margin in there that I feel comfortable spending just keeps increasing, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And so it's really just understanding that money is a tool. How do we do it well? And it's living like no one else now. I mean, I was the guy that, like I said, in a 15 passenger van, then I had a Honda Civic for a while. Then I had a regular minivan. Like I drove everything with no shame. Because that's what I could afford at the time. And so I was always the buy tags, not gear type of guy. That's been my motto. And so I've done things dirt cheap too. Like even my oddhead hunts, I've got a ranch we hunt. It's $750. Like good luck finding an oddhead hunt for $750.
Yeah, for real.
And we've done really well on the place. And so I've been very much the budget guy forever, but I've started to have more margin in the last couple of years that I'll start spending that money on. Not necessarily a guided hunt. I love private land DIY. Is like my favorite go-to. And so that's kind of where I try to end up most of the time. But doing that, but I will come back. My brother always teases me. He's way more successful in some ways than I am and has gotten in the multifamily game and does a lot of development and building. And then they've started a large management company. But he's like, you would never be half as successful as you are if hunting was cheap. And I'm like, that's probably true. I mean, the end goal is you see the writing on the wall and you're like, hunting's only getting more expensive. So the easiest way to do that's make more money, not to keep arguing and fighting and keeping hunting cheaper, because it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
If that kind of makes sense. And so my model has always been, let's figure out how to make more money. So then it's never a problem. And I can still do the things I enjoy within reason, while not causing everything else to suffer.
All right. How many of you guys hate dealing with tangled up rope, trying to untie it? It's all knotted up and you actually really need it at the time. Don't raise your hands because I obviously can't see you, but those days are long gone. Rapid Rope is a quick deploy rope solution that you can pull the length you need and cut it all with one hand. You don't need knives or scissors or a lighter to singe the end because it's cross-threaded to keep it from fraying. Yeah, they've thought of everything. And this is way stronger than your average 550 cord. In fact, this is 1,100 pound test. It comes in a shatterproof canister that you could fit in the cup holder in your vehicle or your backpack, or I don't know if you still wear cargo pants, any one of the 1,000 pockets that you have. It comes in a 120-foot canister, a 70-foot canister, and you can get a rope refill. So just in a matter of seconds, you could be deploying and cutting rope with one hand again. So if you want to stop dealing with the headache of untying rope and detangling everything anytime you need to tie something down, go check out rapidrope.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. If you're an avid listener of this podcast, you've probably heard me talking about Infinite Outdoors in the past. Infinite Outdoors is expanding access for hunting and fishing on private land across the country. From whitetail hunts in Missouri to waterfowl hunts in Wyoming and pheasant hunts in Colorado, they provide access to over 1 million acres of private land listings for all types of hunting and fishing. Best part is, it's incredibly easy to browse and book properties all on the Infinite Outdoors app. The app is free to download and easy to use. All you have to do is sign up and you can browse over 250 different adventures across 10 states. Download the app today and use NOMADIC15 for 15% off your membership. No, that's brilliant. I mean, I love that mindset of like, hey, I'm gonna do things on a budget. I'm spending money on tags instead of new gear because I mean, you could spend millions on new gear. Like,
yeah,
the amount of stuff that comes out, and I'm a sucker for advertisements. Like, I'll see something, I'm like, how have I hunted this long without that? And it's it's the most pointless thing that I would probably never use. It would end up in a tote on my garage shelf. But yeah, putting the money into the experience or into the opportunity instead of into the gear. I mean, it seems like you've come quite a ways putting that kind of money into the tag system before season even kicks off, when you start with a $400 mouse infested van.
Yeah.
But it's,
and you do. And I've got really good optics. Like, optics are number one. Like, I've got the Swaros and I really love the SIG stabilizing binos. Like, got a couple pairs of those. And so I'm huge on the optic side of things. But when it comes to like gear and backpacks and everything, I mean, I'm still rocking my XO. I don't know if it's a version 2 or 3 from 5 years ago, packed out more critters with that thing than, I mean, there's Cliff Gray and there's a few guys that have packed out more, but this is packed out its fair share. And so you really don't, I mean, I've killed a lot of crap in my Carhartts. Like, I'm huge Carhartt sweatshirt, Carhartt pants, like that's my go-to. And so I will hunt that a lot. And I have all the other gear now and it's great, but I still find myself hunting in my Carhartt sweatshirt most of the time. You can do a lot on a decent budget still. It's just allocating it correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So you're hunting, you know, up to a dozen states a year, more than a dozen states a year.
Yeah. How I'm toning it down this year. I've only got 6 or so.
But... Only 6 or so. Yeah. I don't think it wasn't until I was probably mid to late 20s that I had hunted 6 states in my life. So I think you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
How do you go about prioritizing? Or is it like, hey man, this year I'm really excited about this. I haven't done this hunt, haven't done this unit or this state.
Yep.
Where does that come into play?
So the number one Western animal is big mule deer, and anyone can argue with me all they want, but elk are very secondary. And antelope are very third down the chain. So I love big mule deer. And so I have been pursuing and chasing big mule deer my whole career, getting tags anywhere and everywhere I possibly can. And so this, I went to Alberta last year for the first time, and I'm like, I don't know why I haven't been doing this my whole life. Yes, it's incredibly expensive, but the quality up there is insane. And then I hunted Eastern Colorado for mule deer last year for the first time too. And I was like, once again, why have I not been doing this?
Yeah.
So I'll still hunt the Dakotas. I've got a North Dakota any deer tag. I got a our archery tag, and then I have a South Dakota archery tag. And I have some pretty good connections over there. And then I'll hunt my Montana deer tag. And then for the most part, I'm looking at like those upper tier hunts. So where can I go that there's a legitimate chance that, you know, 175 plus mule deer, yeah. If that kind of makes sense. So I've killed, I don't know, 45 mule deer probably, between, let's just say 135 and 187 is my biggest. And so it takes a lot on the mule deer spectrum to be like, okay, yeah, that's a deer I really am excited about going for. And so I've started to allocate way more money for mule deer, but less tags and less hunts. I used to play the game of like, let's try to get 5 tags, bounce around and hopefully get lucky and kill a 170 somewhere. And you end up with 3 150s and then one eaten tag and then one buck, that's maybe 164. Like that was kind of the way it worked just in most of the Western hunts, which there's nothing wrong with that. And guys, absolutely, like first time out, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But I was getting to the point that I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily what I'm looking for. And so for mule deer, I allocate that. And then Montana, my wife and I have archery hunted it. She killed a really nice bull last year. I was chasing a big one, didn't end up getting one with my bow. So this year I would really like to kill a really nice bull with my bow, like something in that 340 class, hopefully, or a little better. And then Wyoming, I haven't hunted this area before. I drew a general Eastern tag. We'll kind of see how that goes. But yeah, I've dropped the numbers. I mean, at one point I was hunting 20 some tags a year. This year, I think I have probably 11 or 12, okay, which is still a lot, but I'm dropping it and then trying to get that top tier quality. And then you just kind of find places you really love. Alberta was awesome. It reminded me so much of northern Minnesota with like some South Dakota mixed in. And it was just awesome. The quality of deer, there wasn't a ton of deer, but the quality, and just like I can come back here every year and look forward to it. And this is an awesome hunt, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And so my goal the next 2 years is to really find the 4 or 5 rotational hunts that I want to do every single year. And then you add in some adventure hunts alongside of those. And then you kind of back off of the applying for, you know, 130 tags a year. If that makes sense.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Tag application season is always overwhelming. Cause I'm like, dude, I don't even know where do I want to go this year? Where do I have time to go this year?
Correct.
You know, what other hunts? Cause I'm fortunate to get invited on a lot of private land hunts. Like I had a guy, he's got 11,000 acres in South Texas. And he's like, dude, come down here, Audad, mule deer, whitetail, mountain lion.
Go for it. Axis. What are you waiting for?
And I'm like, dude, that sounds amazing. He's sending me pictures every day. 4 mountain lions in the last 3 weeks they've got. And I'm like, dang. So we've been talking and trying to set stuff up, but I just like the new hunts. I don't know what it is. Like there's definitely those hunts, like you said, 5 hunts that you want to hone in. And like, these are every single year I'm going to come back and I do the same thing, but there's just weird hunts out there that like,
there is.
If you told me I could go and blow dart iguanas off of retaining walls in Florida, I'd be like, what are you talking about?
And see, that's hilarious. Cause that's that redneck in me, like the snagging salmon, Alaska, the boat fishing, all those B roll type things. I absolutely love.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I get so pumped up about it. I get pumped up about frog season here. But then there's those big adventure hunts like Alaska that drive me crazy, man. Like those are the ones that I will dump a ton of money into if I have to. Mm-hmm. Or like this year, I want to go out with buddies. I want to just go out and hunt with guys that I know are going to do whatever it takes and try to figure this thing out. And so we're excited. What's a hunt that you have yet to do that you're looking forward to? Like, we're talking top couple on your bucket list.
Brown bear on the peninsula. And then once I get the sheep bug, I'm not looking forward to that. Oddad are bad enough. Everybody's like, why do you have to kill so many oddad? I'm like, dude, there's something about them. I absolutely love them. Like, they're probably my third favorite animal to hunt.
Dang.
And so I think I've killed 7 or 8 now. I don't really know. My wife killed a good one last year too. I absolutely love oddad. And so I will hunt this ranch until it dries up because of the price. I don't think I could ever stomach spending what it actually costs now to go on a decent place.
Yeah.
But I think I will eventually kind of get the sheep bug. I would love to do Argentina red stag, but the number one is probably brown bear on the peninsula.
Okay.
I'm really excited for that. My brother-in-law killed a giant this year and went 10'3".
Jeez.
It was like 27 5/8 skull, if I remember right. So giant bear. I saw the skull when I was up there. I'm like, holy crap. I've killed a bunch of black bears, but those are next level. So yeah. It opened spring of 26. And so I'll hopefully be up there chasing them there.
Are you going?
Yeah, I don't know.
Archery or rifle on that?
I'll go rifle first because yeah. I will hopefully have the opportunity to kill a few of them in my life. And so I'll probably go rifle there. And then if I do an inland grizzly hunt, I would probably bring a bow along.
Okay.
So my goal is to kind of kill everything once and then come back and do it with a bow a second time.
Dude, that's a good strategy, man. I mean, yeah. I feel like you set yourself up for success that way. We've been having this debate, and I know you listen to the Alaska podcast, but I'm like, if I'm going after moose and caribou, I'm doing it with a rifle. Like,
absolutely.
The odds increase exponentially, and then next year I'll come back and do it with a bow. Or, you know, next year we go farther, like maybe we go hit the Brooks Range and see what that has to offer. Because I did the same thing. I sold my bow. Actually, I traded it back when Facebook allowed you to trade firearms. Mm-hmm. Like, they had all those groups. And I traded my bow when I moved to Colorado because I said I'm hunting here for 3 years with a rifle before I pick up my bow. And a lot of people dive into it. And good for the guys that have success. But I'm like, I also like to bring something home, you know, like I like to pull the trigger.
And there's
like
guys that are dedicated to it, and I have a ton of respect for it. But I, with the age my kids are and just life-wise and business-wise, if I can shorten that hunt from 11 days to 5 days, it's worth it at this season of life.
Yeah.
I'll have a lot of years in my hopefully late 40s and 50s when the kids are kind of just a different season of life that I can dedicate a lot more time to those things.
Yeah.
And really grind it out. But at this point, like, every day at home is worth it. I mean, I don't know where you're at with kids and whatnot, but I've got a 6'4", 2 and one on the way. And so it's a handful.
Yeah.
And so I'm very grateful. My wife is incredible, but there's also times where it's like, you know what? Anything past like 6-7 days starts to get to be a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a 7 and a 6-year-old and they're definitely showing interest here. You can hunt, like both of them can hunt this year. And my son's gone out a couple times, and it's the greatest thing to watch his face. Like,
it is.
I've got to get out of the mindset of like, we've got to get something and just like enjoy the moment with him.
Isn't it hard?
It's so hard because
you own this mindset for years of like just killing, like, I took Timber, my oldest, out turkey hunting on a buddy's ranch that he leases in eastern Montana this year. And so we went out, and the first afternoon, I mean, we're working on these birds, and it's a long walk, especially in Montana, because it can be pretty open. We're working up on them, and I mean, it's just so slow going. And he did great, like for a 6-year-old, right?
Yeah.
He just turned 6, like 5 days before. But I was like, man, it's just a different feel, and that's okay. We killed 2 birds and we called one in the next morning right from the roost and shot at like 13 yards and got a great video of him dragging it back. And it's awesome, right?
Yeah.
But it's going to be a little bit of a struggle in my mind, especially as we move on to mule deer and elk and some of those critters. And you're like, man, if it gets away, it gets away. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so competitive. Like, just my mindset of success. And like, when I go out there, my goal every time is to kill the biggest one that I've ever killed.
I know.
Like, always. And it really was challenging with my son because he's like, Dad, what are we doing now? Like, what do we do? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we sit and we listen. and we watch. And I love the moments. I mean, the moments that I remember most, or like that I think about the most, taking him out and sitting in the deer blind with him, is when he like perks up and he's like, I just heard a deer. And I'm like, well, I can see 360 degrees and there are no deer, but you know what? You just heard one. So let's look, you know, but it's going to be challenging, I think, especially getting him into more of the Western hunts, like sitting in a blind. That's okay. You know, trying to get a deer or a turkey, but I'm trying to figure out like, at what age does he start coming out with me? Cause I want him to have those hunts, but I also don't want to miss every other day because he's like, I don't really want to go. I want to stay back at camp. I want to do this. So
yeah. And it's a balance. And so I've seen it where kids get so inundated with it too, at such a young age that they lose appreciation for it.
Yeah.
And so I mean, that was the one thing I would say about growing up in Minnesota is I still haven't lost the spark for Western big game. Like, I absolutely love it. But when you talk to some guys out here that grew up doing it and have spent so much time, they start hitting their early 30s and it's like, just doesn't do it for them anymore, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the most dangerous things to expose kids and just kind of get them like, I mean, your first buck shouldn't be 165 inch deer in Missouri, like in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
And that's my opinion and I will stand on that. But I want my kids to grow up shooting a couple does, shooting some does with their bow, probably going to Texas, shooting an oddad, maybe shooting oddad ewes, whatever it is, but kind of start with some of those hunts. Cause I would much rather wait and burn points and do that sort of stuff once they're 17, 18, 19 and have a level of appreciation for what we're doing. If that kind of makes sense. Not that we're not going to go out and have a great experience. Timber is with me this year when one of my buddies, or employees, I helped him get a bear this spring. And so Timber came out with us and he's sitting there reading his book on a rock in his Crocs, just awesome. And this bear comes out and he hammers it at 560 yards, I think it was, or whatever. And like super lucky, right? If you've ever hunted bears in Montana, it's probably the hardest hunt, in my opinion, at least the hardest one that I've had to learn how to do. And I've gotten better and better at it, but for us to kill a bear is super cool, like awesome. But here's my 6-year-old. I'm like, dude, what a life, what an experience.
For real.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
And so, but I also don't want to get them so stuck on it that there's just nothing. Because I've seen those kids, too, that do a ton of it. And then by the time they're 17, 18, they kind of lose interest and move on to something else.
Yeah.
And so I would never want to burn out kind of that passion or that desire in them at too young an age just because you push them. I mean, I think it happens with sports and everything else, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I kind of got that burnout on fishing in Wisconsin at a young age. Yeah. Where it's like, that was my dad's passion. He loved to fish. Mm-hmm. And I do enjoy fishing, but it's definitely not my go-to. And so we'd go out and it's like, we weren't broke, but we didn't have money. And so we had like the worst little boat that ran half the time and didn't run half the time. And it's like, you get out and then it's like, all right, we're paddling back today and we're not catching fish. But it was like, if my dad was home from driving on the weekend, we were going fishing. And we would go out there and I just was like, this sucks. Like we don't catch anything. I have to paddle the boat. I'm getting yelled at because I snagged on another stump, you know?
Yep.
And so I'm like, I'm trying to be mindful of that with my kids, that it's not going out. It's not a chore for them. It's something that they want to do and something that they look forward to. On the flip side, rifle season, like that will never get out of my blood. And it's like, it was just that one thing that slips away. As soon as it's here, it's gone. And then I'm like, dude, I got to wait a whole year to get back out there.
Dude, the amount of nights I stayed awake waiting for opener, like even when I didn't even have a tag, I'd be 9, 10. We're going to deer camp. We're going to have that experience. Like that is one thing I kind of miss from the Minnesota, Wisconsin feel is the woods are electric that weekend. And it is so cool. I never killed a big deer ever. And was hunting with a 32 special the first year, lever action, model 94. But like that feeling and that excitement and walking through the woods by yourself as a 12-year-old with this lever action and then getting the crap scared out of you by a grouse before you get to your old wooden tree stand. Like there is something to that. But what it did, I just think it gives you such an appreciation for the moments of success then. So then as you kind of graduate and you move to gamer-rich territories and bigger deer and everything else, I've just valued it so much rather than growing up on a farm and whacking big deer and wherever it is. I definitely want to have the same appreciation or drive for it.
Yeah, I think the one thing that like farm deer or like big property deer have is the work behind it. Like then
Absolutely.
when the success happens, it's amazing. But I think about that all the time and I joke with my buddies. I'm like, I'd have a hard time opening morning, walking out of my tent at elk camp and seeing a big bull and shooting him 50 yards from my tent. You know, like if I doubt that's ever going to happen, but say
I'm
it
going to
did.
do it if it does.
I'm definitely going to do it, but it's like those moments where you're packing way back in or you're just spending hours glassing and freezing. That's what makes you appreciate it. If it was a every year opening day, I get one and I'm back home, I'd probably lose interest in that in a hurry.
I know the year I was 16 or 17 in Minnesota, I hunted 70 some straight days with my bow, and I think I went almost 40 some days without seeing a deer. If that tells you anything, like public land Minnesota is rough. And so when I tell people that out here, they're like, "Are you serious?" I'm like, "Yeah." So like I'm jacked. Like last year I sat in a tree stand for the first time in a couple of years, and like I'm jacked when there's does walking underneath me. Like this is awesome. You know what I mean? Like there's actually deer. I'm gonna see 15 deer tonight. This is great. Versus like, I mean, I remember hunting after rifle season and it is desolate on some public land in Minnesota. And so I mean, I remember sitting in the same stand for 10, 11 nights in a row and then finally seeing a doe and a fawn and being like, oh my gosh, there's still deer alive after the Orange Army got done. But it gives you such a drive and an appreciation. And then you just, you push through. I don't know. When there is opportunity, then you're just willing to push through and sit in a ground blind or do whatever you have to do to make it happen.
All right, guys, I've got to tell you about some of the new XOP products that I've been using this fall, and some of them I use in kind of an unconventional way. First off, I use the Mondo saddle, but I also use their turkey hunter vest, and I take the Cold World stand, put it in the back of the vest, and carry it in that way. Depending on how far I have to pack in, I'll just bring a foot platform, but one thing I've learned is that if I put the seat cushion on the underside of the seat and flip it up, it turns it into a knee pad also, or I can flip the seat down and sit on it like a conventional tree stand. I also used their holster kit clipped right onto my saddle to carry in my climbing sticks while keeping my hands free. If you're interested in getting a mobile hunting setup like mine, go to xopoutdoors.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. I had a guy when I first moved to Missouri. I told him, you know, we just moved out onto, technically we were on 70 acres, but it felt like 230 because we had access to 230. And I'm like, dude, I'm so excited, man. I'm gonna go put tree stands up. I'm gonna get some trail cameras out. I'm gonna be scouting. And he's like, dude, good luck, man. You probably won't even see a deer. And I'm like, there's no way deer hunting is that bad down here. And I go out and I'm like, I'm sitting there and it was a slow year. I'm like, where are all the deer? Like, I can see quite a ways. And then I figured the property out, did a little bit of management, and it was a boom. I mean, like last year, I think I had 12 different whitetails over 130 and a couple that were giant. One guy, a neighbor, got one of the deer, 183 inch whitetail, and it was just a
Dang,
tank.
tank.
And I'm like, this guy. I would talk to him every day at work, and he was like, man, I've gone like 6 years without shooting a deer. I've probably only seen like three deer during deer season over those 6 years. And I'm like, holy, how? Like, I drive down the road and I see 35 deer, you know, like they're everywhere down here now. And I don't know if there's just been a boom in the past decade or what, but yeah, I look at that and I go, that guy, when he shoots a spike, is like, this is the greatest thing ever. Because I see three deer, or I see one deer every other year from the stand. Whereas, you know, the guy who goes out and he can shoot 160 at any point and he's passing it up, there's just a different feel to it, you know?
There's absolutely, and it's there. I wouldn't say either one's right or wrong, but we're all kind of on our hunting journey, and you're only putting things through your own perception. And so I know how hard I've worked for that 110 inch deer in Minnesota before. And so, and how many days I've grounded out in 0 degree temperatures. And so, like, when you do have hunts that go your way, and like last year, I was super fortunate. I killed 3 bucks over 150 with a rifle. or three whitetails over 150th rifle. And you're just like, man, yeah, I would have like, you know, given anything back then to see one of these deer. Yeah. Like, I still remember a couple bucks I watched running ridges in Minnesota. I'm like, that deer is probably 130. Like,
yeah,
it was probably 119 inch 4-point, but, or 8-point, I guess, for Easterners. But
yeah,
at that moment, you're just like, I'm going to sit here every day until he comes back. And he never does, but that's okay.
Okay, I've got a question. You grew up hunting Minnesota. Everything was pointers, right? Or where were you? Like,
what do you mean?
For whitetail. Like, you saw a buck that had 7 points. It was a 7-pointer, right?
Yeah.
At what point did you switch? Or do you still call whitetail by how many times they have?
I switched probably 3 years ago to just like 4 points or 5 points or whatever.
Okay.
It was when I really started hunting the Dakotas a bunch, and I got a older buddy I met at a gas station there randomly. Now we've hunted all over together and whatnot, but he called everything like that. Like, oh, that's cool. You know, at 19, I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going to do that. So I did. Haven't changed.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. It took me a while in Colorado. In fact, I was completely oblivious to the fact that there was a switch, and people would be like, dude, I shot a really, really nice 4-point last year. And I'm like, oh, good for you, buddy. You know, like not realizing that he shot a giant.
Yeah, 175 inch. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, cool, dude. Good for you. And he shows me a picture. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? That thing's huge. And he's like, yeah, I told you it was a good one. And anyways, I had probably heard a half a dozen stories about people sharing success. And then it took me that long to figure out that they just talk about it way differently. Cause I'm like,
I don't really know where I got it up from, I guess, but it's become pretty inundated into my vocabulary, I guess.
Yeah. So. When I go out west, if I'm hunting western states, I use that terminology. If I'm hunting here in Missouri or up in Wisconsin or anywhere east of the Mississippi, really, I still go with however many times they have.
Well, then I killed the 13 pointer last year with my rifle in South Dakota. So, you know,
13, that sounds a lot cooler.
Sounds a lot cooler than a 6x7. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, dude, that's awesome. So I do have a question for you with hunting with your kids, say Timber's out there with you.
Yep.
And got his first elk tag and just an absolute monster, like 350, 360 inch bull comes out. Are you shooting that or are you going to let him shoot that? No. Okay. Okay.
I'm shooting that. There's no, I mean, it depends where you're at, right? In your journey. Like I don't know. My wife now, on the other hand, she'll get to shoot whatever.
Yeah.
She has earned every single right. Not that it's an earned right, but she's a fairly avid hunter. And so she always gets first dibs. I could care less. And elk, I don't know. Depends if it's a rifle. If I feel like he's going to actually get it done with a bow, I'd probably be like, how about you sit here for a little while? I'll be right back. but it might also change a little. I mean, who knows? Once I kill a couple of them that size, hopefully, I'll probably view it a little bit different. Mule deer would be tough, though. Anything over 180 mule deer-wise, like, man, it just does it for me.
You'll get to appreciate this one day. That's kind of where I'm at with my kids. Cause I'm like, dude, I'm out there putting in the work, and like, they come out there, they love to go, you know, I've got cellular trail cameras now. So it's like, I don't have to go and check cards, but every now and then I'll run around and just check on things, check the fence around the bean field, check my stands or like stand locations, our trees down, and they come out and they absolutely love it. But the amount of work that I put in to scouting and going on these hunts and prepping gear and all this different stuff. And then my kid, he just gets woken up and he's like, we get to hunt today. And I'm like, yep. He's like, can we stop and get candy at the gas station? I'm like, yeah, we'll grab some snacks, you know, and we get out there. I just think it'd be really hard for me, even during youth season, if one of my shooters stepped out and I can't legally shoot, it would be really hard for me to be like, yeah, go ahead and take that.
If I couldn't legally shoot, he's hammering it. Dude. But if we both have the same tag, that would be
it. If we both had the same tag, I'm definitely shooting. But also, I'm like, dude, if a little orc walks out, like, go for it, bud. Like, shoot that thing. His first deer doesn't matter. His second deer, a little bit more. But then after that, I'm going to start teaching him. This is kind of the things that we're looking for. If you get excited and a doe walks through, go ahead and blast it. I don't care. But
and it's hilarious because we'll watch a lot of YouTube and my 6-year-old is pretty good. Like it's like, hey, how big's that one? Is that one a shooter? And so he started to get that like mentality. And it's just it'll be interesting to see and watch it, you know, play out. Because when you're sitting there with a bow in your hand, it's a very different feeling.
Yeah.
Or with a gun in your hand and it's your tag in your pocket.
Just wait till you get out there and he's like, nah, no, not that one. And you're like, no, that's a good buck. And he's like, no. He's got higher standards than you, right?
We'll see if that's the case. Yeah, I kind of view it a lot as I kind of view the financial thing too. And like, I mean, I've seen a lot of kids that inherit a lot from their parents, and I don't necessarily know if that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Or what the best way is. Obviously, everyone has freedom to do it however they want. But my wife and I talk about this all the time of how are we going to handle this with our kids? And so we definitely want them to work and to earn it because I feel like it has more value. And so I kind of feel the exact same thing with hunting. And so now if he's out there with me putting in the time and he's 13 years old and he's got this archery tag and he's ready to go, I don't think I would take that opportunity from him. But if it's one of those things and you wake up and that deer walks out and it's the biggest buck I've ever shot, I'm like, you know, it'd be a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah. With my son, I'm like, you know, one of those big bucks that I've been tracking for years and years. Yeah. I feel like him going out there and shooting it, even during a youth season, I'm like, he's not really gonna, I feel like I almost wasted that buck, if that makes sense.
If he
shoots it and it's just like he doesn't fully appreciate it, he'd be just as excited about a little like spike.
Yep.
He couldn't care less. He just wants to be out there and get a deer. And so that's where I have a hard time. I think personally, and I'm going to tell you how to parent here. I think at 17, your kids need to buy a van and go back and hunt public land Minnesota for 12 days by themselves.
That would be a stretch. We have more deer in our backyard in Montana than I saw in Minnesota in a year.
than a whole county in Minnesota.
Yeah.
No, that's – dude, I mean, to instill that hard work, that work ethic, and what it takes to – excuse me – what it takes to actually succeed out there, I think there's no replacement for that. Like, you can walk them to a deer. You could take them to a high fence place. They could get a fun experience that they're going to really enjoy. But as far as their – longevity in the hunting space or their overall journey in it, I think having them learn the right way instead of it handed to them is always the way to go.
And understanding the whole process. I mean, last year I shot an antelope with all three of my kids, which was in our yard. I mean, it was a great 7-incher, but it was an antelope. But to have all three kids watch it was awesome. I shot it like 74 yards with my bow. They watched it run off, and I got a little video of Timber. My wife does because she was filming it. He got him. It's running like he got him or whatever. And it's just like the cutest thing in the world. And it runs over, tips over, and then we all clean it up together. And then we eat it the next day.
Yeah.
And so that whole experience too, I am huge on the food side of things. And so obviously going to Alaska, you're going to have a little bit of a trick getting that meat back. It's very doable.
Yeah.
And moose, I was not super impressed with. Some people love moose. I was very disappointed with the meat for my moose.
Interesting.
And it's not, I mean, some people absolutely love it. It was no better than elk, I would tell you that, or whitetail. In fact, it had a much stronger flavor, in my opinion. But we do all the canning of meat. We'll make our own sausage. We do all of that. We can piles of pickles and beans and carrots and everything. And so really instilling that whole process of like, you know, here's a game animal that we're going to harvest. And then not only are we valuing its horns, but we're going to value the animal itself. And then we're going to make jerky and we're going to process it. Or we're going to make sausage or we're going to cut steaks from it. And so I think just having them watch you do that from day one. And then he's out there practicing his bow with me on our hay bale. And that whole experience, I think you're just training them right doing that.
Yeah.
And so many kids are so busy that they're getting pulled out of sports for one day to go hunt or something like that. And don't necessarily know. I mean, once again, nothing wrong with that, but I would rather from like start to finish, they're understanding the process.
Yep.
And like my kids know what a backstrap is. They know what the heart tastes like. They know all these different things. The front shoulders are for sausage and so forth. And so like, I'm hoping by the time he kills his first animal, he can process the whole thing himself.
Yeah.
Dude. And so, yeah.
That, I mean, I look so forward to that. I really do. And I mean, that's part of our progression in the hunting journey. Like, thinking about my son pulling the trigger and just looking over at his face, or watching my daughter shoot a turkey every time. Right. It's so funny because the kids are so gentle and they're so loving with animals. And then they know that, like, deer and turkey, those are fair game. And my daughter, I told her yesterday, I said, sis, I found a mouse in the pool today. It was a dead mouse. And I had to scoop it out. And she goes, oh. Well, if we see a deer, she goes, shoot that deer, Dad, shoot it. And I'm like, well, it's the middle of summer, and that we live in, it's like a country neighborhood, but it's a neighborhood. And I'm like, that's not how it works. But she's going to be, I've got a weird suspicion that my daughter is just going to be way more diehard than my son is about it. She's on her dirt bike every day. Every animal she sees, she points out. Awesome. She's the one smashing spiders. And my son's like, Dad, there's a spider. And I'm like, kill it. Nice. I don't have my shoe. And I'm like, find something, dude. Smash it.
Yep.
But it'll be interesting.
It is. And each of their personalities. Yeah. Monty, my second oldest, Montana, loves like the gutting and the cleaning and everything. I mean, she wants me to open up the guts every time so she can look and see where it was hit and that whole thing. And like, what's that, Dad? What's that, Dad? Timber's not as much into that. But we have like 40 chickens. And so we had a couple extra roosters. And so he could hunt those ones. And they are wild now. They've been chased for probably 3 months by a little boy in his underwear with a bow. And he's gotten two of them, but one of them is so wild. Like, you just open the gate to go out to the yard and he is gone. But I mean, we set up a stand for him and that whole deal, and he can bait him in, but he has to only shoot that rooster. Right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he was out there probably 3 hours the other day, and it's just hilarious because it's like you're just building that in his brain that we're willing to work for it and sit in the sun and sweat and do all these things for an opportunity.
Dude, I'm serious. I think farm animals are the best thing for kids and work ethic. And just watching the switch from like being timid about things to just being like fearless. My son, I don't know, I think he was probably 3 years old, and we had a sow and a bunch of piglets get out of a pen.
Yep.
And they're running through the woods. The guy whose property we were living on, he was out there. He had a basset hound in a lab. The basset hound thought she was a cattle herder. And so she's just like trotting behind. Well, this sow's an easy 350 pounds, maybe 400 pounds. And here's my three-year-old son, same thing, in his rubber boots and his underwear, standing in front of where this sow is sprinting. I'm like, she is going to flatten you. And that's best case scenario.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I said, Canyon, get on the sidewalk. And he goes, no, Dad, I got this. I mean, in his mind, he was wrestling that thing to the ground. So I just grabbed him and threw him out the way, because I was like, she will run you over, dude. And it's not going to be good. But it is a lot of fun to see that. And oh, man. Yeah, they've got BB guns. I'm trying to decide, like, do I let them start shooting them here? Because we do have houses around, and it's like the gun safety is a big thing. But also, I'm like, I really just would rather not issues with my neighbors because I see cardinals dropping off of power lines.
That's why I love the bow. I mean, I just think that that's a great starting point for him. My son's cross-eyed dominant, though, so that's been interesting. But he's got about 130 little animals in the house, too. I mean, we're talking African, Asian, everything. If you ever come over, he will absolutely quiz you. And you'll have no idea what these things are. Like a shiru.
I don't know what a shiru is. Every one of them. That's cool.
And then he's got some, like a rubber band gun, and then a Nerf gun that he shoots them with. So he'll line up 100 animals and shoot them all. And made a great shot, Dad. I got six of them. I'm like, good for you, bud. So that's a favorite winter pastime in our household. But
My kids have the Nerf rivals that shoot the little like paintball sized Nerf balls.
Yeah.
And they, spider was in the house the other day, and they're like, I hear him yelling down there, and I'm like, try to get it. Well, then they both come up and they've got their Nerf guns and they're like, come find it, Dad, it crawled into the carpet. And so we go down there and they're looking and they're like, it crawled inside of the carpet. And my son just starts shooting the carpet. I mean, like, he's doing
hammering away.
Yeah. Like he's in the mob, right? Just, I mean, like spray and pray. And he's like, I don't know. I think I got it. I'm like, bud, I don't think that's how that works. You don't just shoot the car. I mean, you've got a big room down here. You're not just going to shoot the carpet and randomly smash it. But yeah, I love it, man. I'm so excited to get the kids out. And so you said you've got six states you're hunting this year.
Yep.
Trying to hone in exactly what
states. Yeah, so I've got a couple hunts I'm redoing, or not redoing from last year, but I had a great time in Alberta, had a good time down in Colorado. So I'm redoing those hunts. The North Dakota, South Dakota archery, I've been doing that for years. So I kind of have those not figured out, but a good enough idea.
Yeah.
Montana, I'm not sure exactly where I end up on my deer tag yet. We have a ranch, the 7th through 13th. My wife and I are hunting for elk. Should be pretty decent. So we're hunting there. And then I've got a Wyoming ranch I'm hunting the last week of September for elk. And then I'll go back with a rifle if I don't find quite what I'm looking for. And yeah, that's kind of about it. I got a whitetail tag in South Dakota. So I'll go hunt that.
Dude.
And we're doing Texas again in January. So I don't know.
Sounds like a dream season, man.
Yeah. That's so you ready for Alaska? That's the real question.
Dude, I'm as ready as I can be, I feel like.
Okay.
I mean, what pointer would you give to a first time moose or caribou hunter as far as like, hey, avoid this or maybe look for this? Like we've been doing plenty of research, and a couple of the guys that I'm going with are killers. I mean, they really are. Like, they get it done. I've moose hunted with one of them before in Colorado, but I just don't fully, like, I don't know what to expect. And I kind of like it that way, but also I'm like, I would like a little bit of help figuring it out.
So Alaska is so vast. I would say in my experience in Alaska, there's so much barren area. Like, everybody thinks of Alaska as so game rich, and it is, but it's also like, there's thousands of square miles where there isn't a living thing on it.
Yeah.
And so we get like the movement from like Minnesota and like, okay, there's seven of us hunting 90 acres, right?
Yeah.
To like, we get out to South Dakota and it's like, okay, I've got three sections to myself, to Montana, where it's like, hopefully, or so forth. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
Alaska, it's like, okay, we need to cover, you know, 50 square miles today. How are we going to do that? That kind of makes sense.
Oh,
like, you're not going to miss a moose. I'm not saying you can't miss a moose, but in my experience, like, you just keep going till you find a moose.
Yep.
And so that, I will also say, all Alaskan animals that I've hunted, I've gotten hate from this from Alaskans, are very dumb in comparison to the animals we hunt in the lower 48.
Yeah.
So yes, obviously they will smell you and all those things, but you could probably walk up to most moose, like within a couple hundred yards in the wide open. I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying in my experience, the moose that I've seen,
dude, you can walk the ridge line. I could see you getting right hate for this. I could totally see you getting hate for this. But I mean, it's the same experience I've had. And I was only on Kodiak, but it's like the smallest deer that I've ever seen, the little black-tailed deer on Kodiak. Yeah. And it really was that way. I was looking at one the night before opener, and it was probably 12 yards from me. Well, technically, there were two of them. Couldn't care less.
They're not smart.
No, not at all. Yeah. And then, in fact, the next day when I shot mine, there were seven other deer with it, and they watched it roll down the side of the mountain and then just went back to eating.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
no, and that's been my experience.
Kind of ruined it a little bit.
Yeah, I get a lot of hate from it, but it's like, I'm sure sheep are a little smarter. I've yet to hunt sheep. But the rest of the animals up there, like, if they don't wind you, they really don't give a crap. You can walk within rifle range pretty easy.
Yeah.
Did you see the blacktail my brother-in-law killed on our goat hunt?
I didn't.
Dude, there's a stomper. So I shot my goat first day. But while we're way up there, I'm watching these bucks down there bedded in the alpine. I'm like, man, a couple of those look pretty good. So the next day, of course, the fog is terrible and it's raining on us because it's Kodiak. But we hiked over there. It's about 2.5 miles, dropped off this very steep embankment that I don't tell my wife about, one of those ones.
I'll just ended up down this there. Part out of the podcast in case you listen.
That's okay. Anyways, and so we get down there and we pop up on the other side and we went through, I mean, Kodiak's I don't even think Kodiak's that bad. People are like, oh man, Kodiak's the worst place I've ever been. Like, there's a few spots that are bad, but at least where I was, it was not terrible.
Yeah.
So we made it up there, and this the buck I ended up shooting popped out, which is just, you know, a nice little 3-point blacktail. And I'm like, oh, there's a buck. And the since he came with me and I shot the goat, it was like, hey, you get to shoot the blacktail first, right? So this one pops out, and I'm like, oh, it's a pretty good buck. So we're getting set up. I think we're 390 yards away from it, and it's way up on the side hill and or the side of the mountain, whatever. And all of a sudden, another one walks out. I'm like, holy crap, that thing is a giant. And so sure enough, he's like, well, can I shoot that one? I'm like, are you going to mount it? He's like, no. I'm like, then no, you can't shoot it. Like, well, I'll mount it. I'm like, okay, sounds good. So, and he's just hilarious.
You convince me, you got to talk him into it.
Oh, I did. Born and bred Alaskan, like has hunted everything, but just there's like, yeah. I'm like, dude, that thing's a giant. I'm like, if you mount it, you can shoot it. So sure enough, he dumps it. I hop on the gun, hammer mine. And I'm like, well, you shot the big one, so you have to go get him. I'll stay down here and point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
So, and he's great. Absolutely love him, but it's hilarious. So he went up there and like, I had no idea where he disappeared to, but he came down through all the thick stuff and is like dragging both bucks. And they are way bigger than they give you credit for. Or at least these ones were. Yeah. But he brings his buck down. I'm like, holy crap, that is a giant deer. But
dude,
they're animals.
I need to go and look at that, man. I really do. Hey, I hate to cut this short. I mean, I know we've been talking over an hour. We could keep talking, but we do have a pregnancy appointment to get to, and
those are important.
Yeah, they are. She just peeked in the window and she's like, "We gotta go." But dude, I really appreciate you hopping on, man. Where can people find, where can they find you online? Where can they check out the business and follow along?
So I'm just on Instagram basically. And then I've been doing a little bit of small business consulting. So if that's ever anything anyone wants to connect on, just shoot me a DM on Instagram. So it's just Peter Herzog, nothing fancy. Haven't really done anything official business wise with that, but if someone's like, hey, I want to take my blue collar business to the next level or interested in starting one. I absolutely love that stuff. So somewhere between like that 400,000 and 4 or 5 million of revenue, like guys in that range, it's like, hey, how do we optimize this or how do we do it? So, I've really enjoyed that part of it. I'd love a couple more guys. So that'd be one thing, but otherwise, yeah, you can follow me on Instagram. I don't really post a ton on there, but there's some dead things on there. So
there are some awesome dead things on there. Yeah. So go check it out. Well, dude, I appreciate it, man. We will keep in touch and, thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.